Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 649. It's a very foggy day in St. Louis, Missouri today. I'm playing the Pageant Theater tonight and a bunch of other dates at funcomfortabletour.com. Oh! That's another date being added. That just happened. And other dates are coming in. Go to funcomfortabletour.com. See, now I could let that go, but I didn't make a sound effect to make it sound like another date was adding. I use an email notification service, all right? It's a plugin for Chrome. And it was telling me that I have an email coming in, and I can't lie. It's not about a date at all. I think it was from my friend Dave Anthony. I'm not sure. But in any case, FunComfortableTour.com for all the tour dates. And let's go to the Nerdist Community Corkboard. You guys are out there doing stuff. I want to try to help you. So, as I said, I'm in St. Louis. This is for March 14th, Pi Day, 314, and at 31415. So, at March 14th... Oh, that's another email coming in. Oh, hey, Rain Wilson. March 14th, 2015 at 314-15923. So at 9 minutes and 23 seconds on March 14th of 2015, do something, kiss a person, or fist pump the air, or just take a moment to be mindful of things. Here's what's going on March 14th in St. Louis. The St. Louis Craft Mafia presents Green with Indie, an eco-friendly craft show from 10 to 5 at Webster University. Come out and pick up some handmade eco-friendly goods. Stop by the photo booth. See if you can spot the Craft Yeti. For more information, go to greenwithindiecraftshow.com. Let's see what else is going on. Kelly Fisney, I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but it's F-I-S-N-E, paints customized shoes and sells them through Etsy. She paints Doctor Who-themed shoes, Deadpool, other comic books. If you go to shoesthingsinpaintings.com, that's not I-N, it's the letter N. So shoethingsnpaintings, or just search Shoe Things and Paintings on Etsy and you'll find it. And the cinematic pop band The Modern Electric is releasing a new album this June called Original Motion Picture Soundtrack, produced by Mike McCarthy of Spoon. And go to themodernelectric.com to see their music and or videos. And that's what's happening from you, the Nerdist community. This episode is Josh McDermott, who you may recognize from a little show called The Walking Dead, which is a zombie show. It'll never catch on. But Josh is actually a stand-up and a very funny comedian, and he crushed when he was on At Midnight a few weeks ago. And he's a good dude. He plays Eugene on The Walking Dead, and I'm glad we were able to snag him while he was in town to trap his soul on the podcast. All right, and now here's the Nerdist Podcast number 649 with Josh McSpermit. For that joke to make sense, you're going to have to watch the episode when Kirkman and Lauren Cohan and Josh were on At Midnight. So if you don't do that, just know that if you heard that just now and got the reference, oh, the joy it would bring your life right now. So, Katie, start the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Is this the guest book?
Yeah, you're stroking Chewbacca.
I want to. It feels really good.
Yeah, he likes that.
Of course it feels good. It would fucking feel amazing to pet Chewbacca.
Well, I sort of feel like, how often do you think he showers?
Chewbacca?
Yeah.
I don't think they
I
do.
Know, I don't think the Falcon has the facilities for that kind of thing.
The Falcon, they would have to have a, then the drain would get super clogged.
Go to Mos Eisley. And
well, they probably don't do it on the Falcon, but like if they land somewhere and then they have like an extra day or two, he goes for like a like the equivalent of a truck stop.
I think he has a bunch of...
I bet the natural, there's like a natural springs in the Hoth base. That
he either cleans himself or he forces a bunch of Ewoks, like pet Ewoks him. To wash him.
Yeah.
Like a Korean spa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But with Ewoks.
And yeah.
They
and,
just scrub. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like an ordeal.
And then they, you know, give him a handy at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a...
What if like Chewbacca or Wookiees as a race, what if they just like sweat, but it just smells like lilacs?
It doesn't. I don't think it would.
It doesn't? You're Dude, saying that as a fact?
They're basically like a humanoid bipedal dog species.
You don't know
species.
What the planet's like. You don't know what is coming out of them, what they're sweating.
But they probably, I would imagine
could
that...
smell like bacon.
I would imagine that Wookiees are not vegetarians.
Right.
So he probably just eats
He's
like
He's got
a,
the meat sweats like eats all like the time. Sweats.
Yeah, it's just like...
It just smells like brisket.
Yeah.
I'm into that.
You just look at him, you just go, that thing stinks. Like, you can see someone walking down the street and you can tell that they're probably farting all the time or they don't shower. That's what I would get with when you look at a
like,
Wookiee.
Wookiees would have like eye boogers I mean, and like,
you,
like crusty little noses.
Even if you look at Peter Weller... He looks like he doesn't smell great.
You mean, oh, wait, no, you don't mean Peter Weller.
I mean, fucking, what's his name? What's Chewbacca's name? Peter Weller, by the way, does not look like he smells
Peter
great. That's out of the
May,
RoboCop suit.
Peter May.
Mayhew.
There
Peter
you
Mayhew.
Go.
By Willie Nelson did.
Yeah.
When yesterday Chris thought Kenny Rogers was Willie Nelson.
No, I didn't think Kenny Rogers was Willie
he
Nelson.
He thought Kenny Rogers was Willie Nelson.
I thought my friend was in a commercial with Willie Nelson because I'd only seen it once. And then I was like, oh, no. It was actually Kenny Rogers. I didn't actually mix them up. Like,
no, you did because in your mind you were like, you know, they did the song and they were gambling and, you know, the gambling.
For some reason in my head, like Willie Nelson got painted in because I had just come back from vacation.
I've met Peter Weller for the record and he smells lovely.
Peter Weller does?
Peter Mayhew, I don't know.
Peter Weller is like an architecture professor.
Wow. He's, ancient history.
Peter, I did like a Comic-Con thing with Peter Mayhew, and I think he just like sits the whole time. And,
probably.
Like, signs the autographs or whatever. I would imagine he's not generating a lot of sweat.
Oh, maybe. He
smells so great. Maybe he smells delightful.
He probably smells like whatever the Omni is using for soap over at Comic-Con.
That's probably what he smells. He smells like Comic-Con soap because he does the circuit. You
the
know,
hotel so soaps.
You're like, you're in Cincinnati, aren't you?
Yeah, Hampton Inn. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
I know.
Listen, the beds are comfy.
I know those. That soap smell.
Oh, I do too.
Did
I
you
bring my own soap?
Were you touring? Were you doing touring with stand-up, were you just a sketch guy?
No, I did. I toured on
You toured as a stand-up, yeah.
I would go out with, like, Rogan. And,
right. No, right.
I would do stuff with, I think I had the same agent as Chris Titus for a while, and so he would just shove me on his shows.
Nice.
Which, I mean, it's hilarious. Like, you get stuck with some comics, and I don't want to say stuck, but you get, you know, put together with them. And, like, they have their own audience or whatever, and anyone else who gets on stage are like, screw that guy. We don't want to see him. We want to see our guy that we came to see. But Chris Titus, like, they're kind of, like, of that rabid nature, except their mindset is almost like, if Chris Titus approves you, then we like you, you
right.
know? And, like, they were always some of the best shows ever.
That's nice.
I loved it.
Yeah, it can be tricky opening for bands or, like, or, like, super famous. Like, I don't think you'd want to open for, like, Chris Rock or no. something, you know, like, because
you know, it's easy,
but
opening for that guy,
it's easy,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
Real nice audience,
yeah, they're nice,
they're nice,
yeah,
yeah.
They're sweet,
kidding.
That's what you want. You want someone like when I was doing stuff with Rogan, it would be, I mean, I had some of the best shows and some of the worst shows because I just didn't know how to handle his MMA crowd,
right?
That was coming out because they're all like juiced up and everything. And, I remember we were at the I think it was like the House of Blues in San Diego. And you know Joey Diaz?
Yeah. Yeah,
so Joey's like real gruff and like in your face and everything. And Joey's hosting the show. And he goes out there and does like 45 minutes as the host. And I think they told him to do like 15, but he's like, I don't give a fuck. I'll do whatever I want. You
Which,
know?
To a non-comic, just explaining like that's not something that is normally done.
No. Like 15 minutes is pushing it for a host. Like,
yeah.
You don't need to do that. But you know, that's Rogan's crowd. So then I'm supposed to come out and do 30. And I'm thinking, geez, man, I'm going to be halfway through my set. And it's going to be an hour that these people have been sitting through comics that they don't want to see. They want to see Rogan. And literally everyone's wearing like a tap out shirt or like, you know, I'm just stereotyping right now. But,
you know, some of them were affliction shirts.
Yes. Yeah. Let's just be honest.
Some of them had, let's say, an affliction.
But they were like, they started heckling me right away. And I was like, oh my God, I'm not prepared for this at all. And I remember someone telling me, and it was probably bad advice, but like with a crowd like that, you can't let them show weakness.
Right.
So you just have to like get back in there. I think it was like they were talking about Bill Hicks had like, would just like totally destroy someone on the front row. And
Hicks would, and then Bill Burr is amazing at that, and Greg Proops is amazing at that.
Well, I have zero experience doing that, because I'm like, if you like are aggressive to me, I'm like, and I run, you know? So I'm like, oh, I got to stand up for myself with these people. And just one guy, you know, they're shouting stuff or whatever, and then clear, and this is House of Blues, so it's big and cavernous. This guy goes, where's Rogan? And I go, he's in the back fucking your girlfriend. Like that, and just I hear... I was like, no. And I had
very
like,
surprising to me. I would think
that was like a zinger, man. I nailed it. No, man, they did not like that. And then
they would cheer, and then you'd hear, Lynn's gonna fuck my girlfriend.
So then they like they're just booing me, and I'm like, I had 10 minutes left. So I start cutting my time. Like I'm like, okay, I could probably do 5 or whatever. So I'm getting off stage. I'm like, all right, thanks. You guys have been great. Like, there's kind of zero cheering.
But it sounds like they had not been great.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know.
You've been an audience.
The thing, yeah. You've sat there. The things you say at the end of your show or whatever. But I'm kind of slinking off stage, and Joey Diaz comes back out and grabs my wrist like I'm a boxer. And he's like, get back out here, motherfucker. And he comes out. He walks right up to the mic, and he throws my arm up like I just like won a boxing match. He goes, cheer for him, you pieces of shit. Blah, blah, blah. And like there's just like a slow building climb. And I was like, let me get out of here, please. And then the next night, we went to some place in Agora Hills, the Canyon Club or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was just like me and Rogan. So I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to just, you know, have a good show. I don't have to deal with Joey Diaz. And it was like even worse. And I was like, started questioning my, you know, comedic abilities. I didn't know. But it's a
fun learning experience, though, right? Oh, to have to steeplechase through a crowd that's not your crowd.
Yeah, it's difficult. It is absolutely difficult.
There are some audiences where there is very, I mean, I don't know. I guess one school of thought would be, yeah, you know, you can get up in there and start punching them in the face and then win them over. But there are some crowds that are just like, they're just programmed to, they just want to see that one guy. And there's nothing, there's really, it doesn't matter what you say. They're not going to be on your side because you are the barrier in between. And of course, they're not really smart enough or care enough to realize it doesn't work that the guy you want to see just comes right out.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way. Like you have to, I mean, so maybe warming them up for them is just like, it's just getting them upset so that they can.
It's almost like you just want your crowd to be at that point where like, finally, I'll laugh at anything now that he's out here. You know, like maybe the headliner doesn't have the material that he needs and then he can come out because like they're finally just waiting for him.
It's so funny too because it's so funny to look at crowd because and obviously you know this is a blanket statement because Rogan's a sweet guy.
Yeah,
he's a great guy and a lot of his fans are great people too. But sometimes when you kind of get when you get a certain element together in one room and then they're as much as laughter is contagious, their impatient aggression can be contagious as well.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that his crowds, and maybe they only changed to me. Maybe they were always the same people to him. But like, they did change when he started doing the podcast because he got all these very intellectual fans, like people who are deep thinkers, and that's what they're drawn to with him. Is because he doesn't. Rogan will talk, man. Mm-hmm. You just like all you have to do is sit back and let him talk, and he just I don't know how he has such recall on so many things, and I mean he's a brilliant comic and all this. So his crowd loves that, but there was that time in between like Fear Factor and the podcast where he was kind of just doing MMA stuff.
Right.
And it was almost like those are the people like, yeah, now let's go get it, you know, and they just went to his shows. And it was like that's the time I was in there.
So it was it's almost like that crowd that likes to go to matches and watch people beat the shit out of each other in a cage didn't want to sit quietly.
No. Yeah, I don't know.
And listen to you spin yarns.
Right. Yeah, they don't want to hear my silly humor.
Here's what you got to do is the next time you're in that situation, you got to grab the guy in the front row, literally tear his head off his body, and then just put it like just like pike it on the mic stand and be like, "All right." And then start doing your, and then that will, you know.
Yeah. So I went to the grocery store yesterday.
I've been there.
If they're not clapping at the start of your joke, like they recognize it, just point at the head.
Buying muscle milk.
Yeah.
Dummy.
So are you doing stand up in between seasons?
I'm starting to show my face again because I actually kind of stopped in a sense. There was like, I did one of those industry showcases. This was like, I don't know, a year and a half ago or whatever. And it was like around pilot season, which is, you know, for people that don't know, is kind of the time of year where all the networks are casting their shows that they might want to put on air. And
it's the time of the year where actors feel the most depressed.
Yes, absolutely. And so my wife had just like broke her knee and needed knee surgery. And like, I was like, the show I was on had just been canceled. And I was like in this really like vulnerable state. And like, I was kind of getting angry and everything. And I was already kind of feeling crappy about doing stand-up, especially in L.A., just because I never felt like I could write new material and get an accurate gauge.
Oh, it's tough. It's tough here.
Really difficult.
Yeah.
And so then I would go on the road, and like I would get a better feel for like my material and everything. But then I'm like, I don't want to be on the road. I want to be in L.A., like on a TV show or something, right? So my agent reps all these comics, and he sets up this industry showcase. And, you know, an industry showcase is not the best place to do a show. They're like some of the worst shows you can do because they're just, it's all like casting directors and producers and all these people that are just sitting there judging you of like, what can we put him in? What project of mine would he, you know, best be fit for? And
also some of them are dead inside.
Yes. They just don't laugh.
Right.
So I go in there and it's like all my agent's clients are on there and Lonnie Love is hosting. Mm-hmm. She's one of them. And she's like crushing as the host, which is like hard to do as a host to begin with, like straight off the bat, but in an industry room. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be a fun show. Here we go. She's destroying. She's like, oh, everyone's hilarious on this show. You're going to want to put them in every one of your TV shows and whatever, whatever. And she brings me up and I ate it for like 9 minutes.
Were you the first comic?
I was the first comic. And like, it was crickets. Wow. And I just like, I was already like feeling shitty about stand up and everything. And I was just, I feel like a whiner right now.
No, whining about this.
But I was just like, oh, this sucks. And I just like stuck to my guns. I was trying to be as likable as possible so that maybe someone's like, no, okay, I'll put him in something, you know?
Right.
And I get off stage. And this was like a bomb. Because, look, I did stand up for 12 years at that point. And I hadn't bombed like that since like year two. Mm-hmm. Like that kind where you just like really reevaluate everything about your life. You're like, oh, this sucks. And so I get off stage and Lonnie Love comes back up. And she goes, well, I lied. They're not all going to be funny. Boom, huge laugh, which like...
No! Why would she throw you under the bus?
Know, like, I'm already under the bus. You don't have to back up over me, you know? But like, I felt like that's hilarious. And like, if it were any other show, I'd be like, oh, that's great. That's funny. But like, on that show, I was already like
no,
like,
why would you?
In the depths of despair. And I was like eye to eye with my agent at that point. And he's like, he was at a loss for words. He's like, sorry, man. And then someone on the front row goes, oh, I thought he was funny. And she goes, you were laughing? She goes, yeah. She goes, no, you weren't. Ain't nobody in here was laughing.
No!
I was like, no! So I like went and sat on the curb, and I was just like, what am I doing?
Oh, no.
But it was like, so I'd only done like 5 shows after that, because I wasn't into it. You know, I kind of lost it. And but at that point, I actually had more fun doing those shows, because I wasn't like putting all my eggs in those baskets of just like, you never know who's in the audience, and
right.
I could get cast in something. And so I would just go on stage and just like dick around. And like there was this one show I did where I had I walked out and I worked up a sweat before I went out. And then I just said, I was like, oh, sorry, I'm a little out of breath. And then I started, went into my material and I'm like wiping my sweat and everything. And then I started telling a joke and I was like, yeah, so you ever notice? And I started faking a heart attack on stage. And this went on for like a minute. And like people, it got really quiet and eerie. And then I said, I'm sorry. And I just like crawled over to my my jacket, which was on the stage, and I pulled out a Big Mac, and I said, I'm just having a Big Mac attack, and I just ate. It was just stupid, right? But, like, the release at that moment, like, people were just laughing so hard, and I was like, oh, stand-up's fun again. But then, like, the next week, I booked The Walking Dead, and then I haven't done stand-up since. So I'm just like, wait, do I still love it, or what's going on?
Well, you probably shouldn't have taken the show so that you could really reinvigorate your love of stand-up.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, let's retool this Big Mac bit.
Well, what's going to be interesting is going on the road now, because obviously people know who you are, and seeing if just seeing what people's expectations are Steve Young has a comedy background as well, but people don't know him as a comedy guy,
right?
And so people have this perception of you as well, although I will say Eugene is a much quirkier character.
Sure.
So I think it'd be interesting to, you know, if you could go do a show and not have people show up and be like, talk about Walking Dead,
I know. Like, I'm going to have to, but yeah. There's also, like, I don't know what to talk about.
Here's all the season 9 spoilers, just, like, for the next season.
But there's, like, you know, because people are always like, oh, I'm sure it's, like, a, you know, it's such a heavy set to be on and, like, emotionally draining, but, like, you guys probably have a good time. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's fun to be there. And like, what? And then I'm, like, blanking on stories. And a lot of them are just, like, situational where I'm like, well, you had to be there, you know? So I just don't know what to talk about. That's part of my hesitation of, like, going back out on a tour or anything.
But I think you have an easy out, which is, like, not allowed to talk about anything.
Yeah, but you got to talk about something. You got to talk about, like,
Andy Lincoln. You can just make stuff up.
Yeah.
Norman Reedus will not walk on set without lettuce cups. Like, yeah. Like, you can just make up things.
Oh, okay. So that's how you write?
You could lie. Yeah.
That's what writing is?
It's lying. You're so lying. Lie to the audience as much as possible.
He really was having a Big Mac attack. He didn't plan that. He thinks everything's truthful.
It just happened in that moment.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, I just, you know, I also need to write, like, a new act, because, like, half my stuff just isn't going to work now, because, like, I was still doing, I'm married, but I was doing jokes about, like, oh, I'm a single loser living with my dad, you know, like, I should have written all these new jokes long ago,
right?
But I just can't do that now, people just know too much about
me. You could be like, I'm a single loser living with my wife, like, you just changed
like the laziest writer, I got a whole new hour, I just changed 3 words.
It totally changes the meaning.
Hello, Comedy Central. You want to put me on? Like,
sure.
Yeah.
That's how that works.
I know. It's that easy. Like, everyone's like trying to audition to get their stand up sets on TV, but
no,
all you have to do is
no
call.
One's calling our booking phone. I just don't understand.
Any messages today? No. Yeah. Not one.
Sitting here.
It's a lot of people, we put the number
in every movie. It's 555-1234.
There's generally not ever good advice that follows the words, you know what you ought to do? Like, there's almost never advice you can apply in the real world. You know what you're going to do is just get on one of those shows. Like, people are always like, oh, you're a comic. You should just get on one of those comedy shows.
Yeah, go be on Leno.
Yeah, you should be on Leno. Why don't you be on Letterman?
You don't understand how hard that is.
Why don't you host Letterman? You should just take over for Letterman. Well, okay.
One time my dad told me, you know what you ought to do is just put the tip in. And it's been great.
Wait, I don't understand. What are you talking about?
Matt, come on.
Matt, we were just talking about...
We were just having fun, and then you just got weird.
Big Mac attack.
Yeah, and now you're... Matt.
I just want to... I'm like endlessly... In my head... Since you've told the story, on a loop, it's been happening. On a loop.
But does that mean that every time you do that bit, you have to go to McDonald's and get a Big Mac and wait in line? And
yeah, I mean, yeah. It's like embarrassing. Yeah, I'll have a Big Mac.
I'm coming to your show in a minute. Okay,
don't
tell anyone.
If anybody asks, I got chicken nuggets.
Hey, there's that guy. I just saw him at McDonald's. Oh, fuck.
You're ruining my bit.
Stop it.
Did you see?
We're helping.
There's like, they're selling like 100 chicken nuggets for like... $10 now in some places.
What?
Yeah.
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 It's like supposed to feed your whole family or something. That's just like, well, I don't get it.
I'm at a loss. I wish that I was still eating that.
I've had McDonald's one time in probably the last 10 years. And I hadn't had it in so long. It was really good. Like the cheeseburger fries. Like
Chris is loving it.
I was loving it. It was really good, but I know that if I started eating it regularly, I probably wouldn't feel that great. I remember not feeling amazing.
No, you'd
right
feel
afterwards.
Fine. By the way, this episode is brought to you by McDonald's.
Oh, that'd be great.
McDonald's.com/Nerdist for your discount
not,
code.
They don't pay you. They just give you Monopoly pieces.
Oh, I already got the hat. Yeah. I want the car.
I try to not eat fast food, but then every once in a while, like even last night, I was like, I need some Taco Bell now.
Yep.
And I'll drive
so you
to
made a run
Taco
for the border?
Bell. Go for the fourth meal or whatever.
Yeah, fourth meal's great.
But I didn't go through the line, thankfully. But like I had no self-control and drove to the Taco Bell and like just sat there and then I just drove away. I was like,
oh,
yeah, victory.
What is your Taco Bell what's your Taco Bell dish of choice?
I mean, it depends on the mood, mm-hmm. but I do like a good beef combo burrito.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
What's yours?
When I was doing it, it would be a Crunchwrap Supreme. It was the perfect driving food.
Oh, I'm a fan of the double decker taco.
Yeah,
which is because I like the textures.
You like the soft and crunchy.
I used to eat.
Well, that's what the Crunchwrap Supreme is.
When I worked at K-Rock from 95 to 98, and there was a Taco Bell almost across the street from the K-Rock building.
That's dangerous.
And they were open. Might have been open 24 hours because there was about a month where I was doing the Kevin and Bean show, and I would go in at. I would get double decker tacos at like 6 in the morning.
Oh my god.
And just eat them for breakfast. I was young at the time, yeah. So that I was completely bulletproof.
Right.
Now I think about doing that and I would have to call in sick for work. Like I would never be able to.
It's not good. It is not good for you. I'd never feel great afterwards. And there's
emotionally or physically.
Well, yeah, there's a Taco Bell across the street from my house but it's so hard to get into. I'm like thankful.
Velvet rope, like it's like super, super exclusive.
Yeah, you gotta be on a list, and oh, it's not good. It just shames you. But it's, you know, the fact that it is so close and so hard to get into, I'm just like very thankful. Otherwise, I would be there every day.
I'm glad that I don't live across the street from like an In-N-Out or like a Five Guys or something that every night where I was going home would be like, are you sure
this
you
is easier?
It's right there.
Yeah.
I'm very, very lucky.
Like, I don't eat fast food very often, but whenever someone comes in from LA to LA to visit, they want to go to In-N-Out, so I take them, and thankfully they have a protein style.
Fuck, you
but
know
I stare at their fucking fries like nobody's.
Oh, the fries, man.
You know what there is not too far from where I live is a Tommy's. Mm-hmm. You ever been to Tommy's?
No, I lived very close to that Tommy's and I had never gone.
Fuck, it's so. And now
is that Tommy's number 9?
Tommy's. When I was in high school, I went to high school in LA for a year, we had off campus lunch. As seniors had off campus lunch, and so there was a Tommy's not far from where I went to high school, which was Loyola High School, downtown, and it was just enough time to get to the Tommy's and then get back to campus. And then at UCLA, there was a Tommy's Shack in Westwood, and it's the fucking. It's so bad for you because it's basically chili burgers with just like this super melty cheese and these skinny fries that are unfucking believable. And especially, I remember in the drunk days of Peter Hardwick, 2 o'clock in the morning, Tommy's. And I would wake up the next morning and be like, why is there a brick in my stomach? I'd see the empty box and then just like dried chili on the paper. Sometimes I would actually just chew the chili off the paper.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
that's a low point.
It wasn't the lowest.
Somebody posted, I saw it on Reddit today, they had gotten a Taco Bell meal 2 years ago and just put it out as a sort of a science experiment to see what it would look like in 2 years. Looks the same.
What?
Yeah, it looks the same.
So naturally, that's good things to put into your body.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. You want to look the same in 2 years, right?
That's how that works.
I mean, are they going to eat it or was it just they just want to look at it?
They're just looking at it. Yeah,
that's...
What it looks like.
They need to eat it.
Yeah.
Or get someone to eat it. Someone will eat it.
That's it.
I mean, if you leave it in the wrong place. But the sign is very clear that says, hey, this is 2 years
old. It's very hard to, like, touring with comedy, it's hard to not eat shitty because your convenience is your enemy.
Right.
And so when you need to eat quickly or you're in a club and there's food there and you don't plan it, then... You're just like, all right, I have to stay alive, so I'm just eating whatever's here. And
just get the Cobb salad. Every club's got a Cobb salad.
Yeah, the healthiest thing at a club is either the club or like just a Caesar. But sometimes the chicken is breaded and that sort of thing. And you're just like,
sometimes it's always breaded. The chicken is always breaded.
But you just go, but then there's time. But that's like always like the lone healthy thing on the menu. And then it just gets tiring after like 5 days of shows, and you're just like, all right, screw it, I'm gonna get the pizza, you know. And then it's just like a rabbit hole. You don't want to go down it.
Do you when you're shooting in rural Georgia, do you have is your life pretty well planned out day to day?
Like meal-wise?
Meal-wise and schedule-wise, like, do you kind of know, like, we're working these days, these other days I'm just going to go into Atlanta. Do you go into Atlanta at all?
I live in Atlanta.
You do?
And then we shoot an hour south.
Right.
And so, but I'm not working every day. I mean, there's like, there was a couple episodes where I, like, was in every day, and that drive kind of sucks. But I figured, because I thought about, like, living down where we shoot, but Andrew Lincoln lives up in Atlanta, and, like, he's in every day. If he can do it, then I can do it, you
right.
know? So, yeah, when I'm not shooting, it's like it's very much like trying to get caught up on life with all the things that I should have been doing while I was shooting. And it's a little easier to kind of like make my own meal and everything. But, you know, when you're on a TV set, like they just have so much food around all the time. And that's all I do is eat. Like, because you're just sitting around just like shoveling macaroni and cheese in your mouth, you know?
Yep. Craft service, which I understand the idea behind it. They want to keep you happy and they want to keep you comfortable. And, you know, putting good food out, good comforting food out is a way to do that, but it's really tempting.
Yeah.
Just go over and like, oh, I've been over four times already.
Yesterday was so, we were so busy at work yesterday that the salad that I got for lunch, I ate during the writer's meeting at 11 a.m. this morning.
Wow.
Like, it was just crazy.
I finally and what did it look like? Was it still in
you
shape?
You know, the avocado did not look great, but I still went
Taco
for
Bell
it.
Taco Bell should, you know, take some notes.
Yeah, it did not look the same as it did yesterday, Taco Bell.
Here's a note. Your food should rot at some point. That's a good sign.
Your avocado should brown.
Oh, my gosh.
Your avocado shouldn't be neon green for 2 years.
Ugh. But, you know, I think I go through these weird phases when we're shooting is like, you know, if I'm not, I don't know, I'll just kind of just go down this path of just like eating like crap or like drinking too much and that sort of thing, and then I'll spend like 3 weeks trying to clean myself up, you know, because I feel horrible. And, you know,
well, it's if you're just constantly cycling out like that, you'll stay the same.
Oh, okay.
You're good to go.
Well, thanks, man.
Just keep cycling. No problem, Josh. See you later. That does it for the Nerdist Podcast.
You, enjoy your burrito. You need to hit at Taco Bell, double decker.
Oh my gosh, Supreme. It all ties together.
You know, yeah. Basically, your health schedule could be the same as if like you're, like a sitcom schedule: 3 weeks on, 1 week off.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I would love to do a sitcom schedule again, because that's like, it's like a 9-to-5 job, or it's like 9-to-2.
Yeah, it is. You know. Oh, and you're not even really working the whole time there that you're there.
But like Walking Dead, and I'm not complaining, but I guess I am. Here goes. I mean, it's like 16 hours in the Georgia heat in summertime. And it's like, what are we doing?
Where you have to be either terrified or unhappy or sad most of the time.
Most of the time.
In the scene, you're not.
And try to not, like, while you're delivering your lines, try to not brush away, make too, you know, big of movements to brush away a snake that's crawling up your leg or
maybe you guys can do a bubble episode where you're trapped and somehow you found a working elevator and then you just remember all the funny
remember
times.
That time when
remember that goofy
clip
zombie
show. Oh man, when we pulled that fat walker out of the well.
Remember when Judith was born? Oh, that was sad too. Everything's sad.
Yeah, everything goes back to being
what
sad.
What if you guys just right, you get here's I'm just pitching it out there. I'll tell Kirkman when he comes by at midnight. You guys get trapped somewhere. You start reminiscing, but you reminisce about old episodes of Night Court. So the bottle episode is just that. You guys talking about Night Court?
Remember when
there
Bull,
is popular culture in this world? So you guys
remember when Mel Torme stopped by and Harry just missed him?
The Velvet Fog.
Part of the episode, we're just trying to recreate the magic tricks that
yes, Harry
a wild department. I wonder how the fans would. How what are the fans would deal
oh,
with
God,
that?
They would still would love it.
Fucking love that.
I don't know if they would.
We could shit in a
what
box
if you guys just sat around talking about, like, remember right before the zombies started coming, the Low Winter Sun was on? Let's take a look.
Maybe they'd go, remember when Low Winter Sun was on? Everyone would go, nope.
Nope.
Yeah. Oh, Lenny James. Well, the guy at the end of the episode's now?
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
All right. So they're related is what you're saying.
Dear AMC, please make a Walking Dead clip show of other television shows.
I feel like AMC could get away with that, and like the fans would still love it. Because like I was a huge fan of the show before I came on it, and like I would love it. I'd be like, oh, this is interesting.
It'd be really crazy if they sat around talking about just different things from popular culture, because they gotta at some point in their downtime. Just go, ah, fuck.
I heard there was this one science teacher in Albuquerque who was making meth. Really?
No.
I remember it went something like this.
No, you're not doing it right.
I'm sorry.
I want them to be remembering the TV shows as TV shows.
You want them to remember Breaking Bad.
I want them to remember Seinfeld. Like, go about, guys, let's have a contest. See who can't jerk off on a walker. Just like that episode of Seinfeld. And then you show a clip of
I think it'd be fun. I will say this. There is room in the show for them to have... And I feel like it could be – I totally see like a Glenn Eugene dialogue thing where you're like, well, I don't think Ross and Rachel should end up together. And he's like, well, yeah. I mean that the whole show was leading up to that. Of course they should end up together. And then Daryl's like, nah, man, it was too predictable. Like you guys are basically
– just criticize the finales of other shows.
Yeah, the other show. And what's going on with Sopranos, man? Yeah. What the fuck happened there?
I love it.
That's totally patter that would happen if you were in an apocalypse. You'd be talking about the world you came out of,
right?
To try to establish some sort of like they could justify it story wise. They could justify it.
Oh, absolutely. But also,
how many scenes are you walking through the fucking woods? Like you got to talk about.
I
something.
Know you can't just keep talking about
talk about Lord of the Rings. You guys are walking through the woods.
Oh my gosh, it's like nerdgasm right there.
You guys remember that Frodo?
Yes.
My precious.
You're like, whoa, you hear Eugene's My Precious? Listen to him.
You climb a tree and you're like, wouldn't it be cool if this tree came to life and just swatted the zombies out of the way? All right, I'll get down.
But this, you know, I don't know if this bothers you with TV shows, like whenever there's something that's kind of out of left field with like some sort of dialogue, you're like, oh, something's about to happen. Like, it's kind of like when they're like driving in a car and all of a sudden there's like a weird angle from outside the car. You're like, why are they showing? Oh, they're about to get T-boned. And
right.
Boom, they get T-boned. Like, it would almost be like that if they do start talking about Seinfeld or some.
Well, I think.
How about this?
You do it and,
You talk about Seinfeld, and then like fucking Jerry Seinfeld as a walker comes up, and then you have to kill him, but then you guys are conflicted. You're conflicted. Like, it's Seinfeld! I can't kill Seinfeld!
Oh, stab him in the head. Like, what do I do?
I don't know.
You're just writing Emmy videos now.
I mean.
To play for the Emmys.
That's true. Yeah. This is for the opening of the Emmys. Yeah. When I host the Emmys this year.
Oh, great.
That's what we'll
just
do.
By the way,
I don't know what kind of, feedback you got on your little your rant, if I could call it a rant, when you kind of came out, we're talking about internet trolls.
Yeah.
Like, was that just totally? I don't know the story behind that. Was that like planned, or like did they know you were going to do that, or what? Because I loved it.
Oh, thanks. I told them I was going to do. They let me write it, and I did it, and I was mostly well received. Like, hardcore internet people thought it was stupid. They're like, they made fun of me for going, oh, look at all these internet trolls. And it's like, yeah, because if I come out and just say trolls, like that audience isn't going to know exactly what I'm talking about. So I, you know, but whatever. It's fine. It's fine. It was fun, and they were cool about it. And they, you know, they gave me free reign to like, yeah, whatever you want to do.
Oh, that's cool.
Know. So it was.
Because I think really when cool. I was watching that, and then I was at the same time like cleaning up my comment section on Instagram, just like,
shut up.
I hate you, you know, or whatever. It's like the more I kind of like look at the comments on the internet and stuff, it's like 12-year-olds. And I'm just like, guys, shut up.
You can't take it too seriously.
I do though. That's the problem. I do.
Well, and especially it must be so interesting to be immediately thrust into the most popular universe in television right now.
Yeah, because people are just so passionate about it, whether they like you or not. They're either passionate that they love you or passionate that they hate you.
Right.
And it's like, it's great, but it's also like, for me, I just want to be liked, you know? Yeah. And so when someone's like, man, fuck you, Gene, why didn't they kill him instead of Beth? I'm like, oh, God, no, leave me alone. The Kimple's trying to tell a story here, just let him. But, you know, it's like, and then you just go, well, they're 12 years old. Like, who cares? You can't let that get at you or anything. But it is very weird to all of a sudden go from like, no one knows who you are to everyone kind of stopping you or like looking at you and staring at you too long.
I would love to see someone, you know, just sort of take let the fans write an episode, like sort of like put it out there and be like, listen, I want you guys, you think you're fucking so good at writing this episode, everybody take a page, and then we'll shoot it.
I'll tell
and
you what,
watch that episode.
Well, it would either be
it's a Doctor Who Christmas special.
It would either
everyone.
Be amazingly brilliant, or it would turn out like when Homer's brother lets him design the car.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's then, exactly what it would turn out like.
I'm ruined.
Well, but all these people do fan fiction and stuff, and I've actually read some of it, and
gets you real hard.
Yeah. Oh yeah. All right. Like Glenn and Eugene stuff.
Yeah.
There's like an Instagram account called Glue Gene.
Flashback.
They do like mashups between the two of us, and like anytime I post a picture of just me and Steven, they go nuts and
That's
they like
fantastic.
Steal it, put hearts around it or whatever. But you know, I've read some of it, and it's just like, okay, you know, that's kind of an interesting storyline, but that'll never work. But, you know, you can't, like, get too critical over it because right. they're just not TV writers.
Yeah. Well, I'm very I've seen the dark side of the Walking Dead fan universe. And then, but for the most part, people are very nice to me. Like, I actually, in the beginning, you know, a bunch of people are like, fuck you, what are you doing? You can't, you're new, fuck you.
Yeah.
And then after a little while, then they're like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you're cool. You're okay now.
That guy's still around. Let's go say hey.
Yeah. I mean, I still get my fair share of fuck you, you're a douche, but for the most part, people are super nice and supportive.
But
and
what do the fans say?
And when I'm in public, they, you know, like I've never had like a dickhead fan experience. I always be like, "Oh, Walking Dead." Like they're super nice and they love the show because there's something about the show that I think people, like, it's an event for people. Like, they watch it with their families. It's like a real bonding experience for a lot of people. And so I find them to be pretty, pretty cool about it in general. You know, like, there are some things that some people, like, stuff will rub them the wrong way and they'll get mad. But I find that to be such a minuscule percentage of the overall, like, I'm super excited and happy and thankful that the, you know, that I've even peripherally be allowed to sort of be involved in all of it. It's pretty neato.
It's fun. I mean, so Tony Hale, who, like
Tony.
Buster from Arrested Development, was, like, when this all, had all started, he was talking about, like, just, like, don't, like, if fans are, like, going nuts over you, it's not about you, it's about them, and make sure that you keep it about them. Which was, I think, an interesting perspective because I think, like, for a celebrity, they could sit there and think that, oh, yeah, look at all these accolades I'm getting and, like, start to get a big head or, like, get a misinterpretation of the situation at times. But if they make it about the person who wants to just share with you, like, oh, we get together with our friends and we watch a show and all that and just kind of pour your energy into that, then it makes it more fun. And so, like, that was great advice for me, and I was like, this is awesome. And that's all I've done because I was such a huge fan of the show that now I can share in the excitement with you and not be this, like, you know, figure. I could just be, like, a fan like you.
Yeah.
And at that point, like, I think that kind of eliminates a lot of dicks sometimes when you're interacting with people. I mean, there have been a few stinkers. Like, I've had this – I was walking around in Sonoy, Georgia, where we shoot, and this guy came up to me, and he's like, hey – you know, there's already a lot of tours down there, and, like, fans were already there. Mm. And I was just trying to, like, get away just so I didn't, you know, get mobbed or anything. And he's like, oh, my God, Eugene. And he, like, grabs my arm. And I was like, okay, that's a little aggressive, but I'm trying to remain happy about it, you know. He's like, can I get your autograph? I'm like, sure. And he, like, pulls out a dollar bill to sign. I'm like, okay, I'll sign a dollar bill. And he's like, you got a pen? Like, no, I don't. And he's like, who's got a pen? And meanwhile, he's like, holding my bicep, like, not letting me go. He's like, who's got a pen? I got Eugene here, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, oh, my God. Like, it's just people like that.
I thought the story was going to end with you signing the dollar and him putting handcuffs on you and going, I'm a federal agent. You just defaced
money. You just broke the law. You're not supposed to deface currency.
Are you not supposed to do that?
Hey, guys, I just arrested Eugene. Look over here.
Are you really not supposed to do that?
You're not supposed to write on money.
Technically, you're not supposed to do it. You're not supposed to write on money.
I mean, and he posted pictures
online.
It's fine.
No one's going to take it down for
all right, that's all we needed.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you get into organized.
Just fall backwards. Yeah.
And you're already in a prison.
Oh, my God. Chris deflates.
Oh, God. That would be so. That's like one of my worst fears is to get arrested, man. I don't want to get arrested at all.
No.
Well, when I was a kid, I always thought it was going to happen. I was like, I'm going to get arrested for something.
I used to get really freaked out by the idea of when I was a kid, I had the wrongful arrest phobia. It's like, I'm going to get arrested for something. And then, like my cousin Vinny, it's like, just weird set of circumstances. Like, no, but I didn't. They're like, but this evidence points to you're going away.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you're, and then there's nothing you can do about it.
Nope.
You know, and you just have to make do in prison. And I
you're
just
like, I'm innocent. I'm like, sure you are. Like, no, I know everyone says that, but I'm really innocent.
I'm still like, when they, I think they say like the guilty man can sleep through the night or something. Like, or what is that? Like in prison, like. Look for the guy who's sleeping soundly through the night because he's the guilty one.
Oh.
And I'm like, what? No, man. Like, when I do something and I feel guilt, I'm up all night like, oh, my God, they're going to catch me or, you know, freaking out.
Well,
it's like, I've never understood that.
You kind of get your lot in life. You go, well, they got me. Might as well go to sleep. But yeah, if you maybe. Didn't do it, you're like, fuck, how do I get out of here? I didn't do
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I'm just, I'm still scared of getting arrested, you know, and
well, don't do anything stupid.
I'm always afraid of. Well, that's the thing. Like, I do dumb things that all of a sudden I'm like, well, that could have gone a lot worse, and like, you know, I could be in prison now or something. Like, I'm afraid that all of a sudden I've like I'll have dreams. Maybe I shouldn't say this on a podcast, but I've had dreams where I've like assassinated a head of state or something like that. And I'm like, how? What happened inside of me that failed? Like, that allowed me to go purchase a gun and to, like, plan out this whole situation where I'm going to, like, kill the president of some country or whatever. And I was like, what? You know, and I wake up, like, freaked out. And I know it was just a dream, but I'm just, like, scared that there's something inside of me that's going to fail, like some sort of checkpoint.
Your Honor, Exhibit A right here, Josh McDermott clearly lays out his plan to assassinate the president of Ecuador.
What failed inside of him?
He says the words right there on this podcast.
You know what failed him? Our 5-day waiting period.
I am scared of that, so.
Don't assassinate anyone. It's very easy. Like, well, just don't assassinate a president of anything.
All those people who assassinated someone, it was just like, you know how easy it was to not assassinate them?
Probably easier.
Just don't.
Probably a lot easier.
Probably a lot easier then.
Hey, kids, this is Josh McDermott from Walking Dead reminding you, don't assassinate presidents.
Do you know how little planning goes into not assassinating someone?
Yeah, you just have to not do it. Although, I do understand what he's talking about.
Oh, like, of course. It's the whole thing of, like, when I see a cop's gun and I want to grab it and just go.
No, what are you talking about?
Wait.
Matt.
Wait.
One
wait,
step
I'm
too
with
far,
you, man.
Right?
I'm with you.
No. You don't have that in
I
your head?
I stare at a cop's gun.
You don't
gun.
Have that in your head. Like, there's, like, the little flicker in you that goes, what is preventing me? What is it about me as a human being that prevents me from flipping the little button up,
okay,
pulling out
that,
his gun?
But I'll tell you what I do have. Sometimes when I'm around... If I'm around like an authority figure like that, or like frail people, like an older person,
mm-hmm.
there I do have the thought of like, what if I just punched this person in the face? Like, what would happen?
Yeah,
you know, like that would be the worst thing I could do. It's like your brain.
No, I have that.
There must be a biological. Well, that's because you hate people. There must be. I think there's a biological thing that happens in your brain where your brain maps out all of the possible scenarios for how the interaction could go,
yeah.
and what the good choices are and what the bad choices are. And the bad one is like, oh, that would, if I did that, everything would be over.
Right.
Like, it's like you're playing out the worst case scenario, not so much for the actual incident of doing it, but just the fallout, like everything that would happen, what would happen, how much trouble would I get
yes.
in, how
yeah.
ruined,
right. yeah.
what would I hurt this person, how terrible would this be? It's like, it's the same thing of like when I'm up on a tall building of going, what's stopping me from jumping? Like, I hope my brain doesn't fail exactly in the same way. And a little circuit doesn't zip around and then like, whoa, why'd I do this?
And maybe that's what's maybe that's why people end up doing things like that, because whatever the checkpoint is fails them.
Now you're going to give him more anxiety because now he's going to be afraid
that he
doesn't have it.
No, you have I think you're fine. You have the checkpoint in place. You're aware of the checkpoint.
For now, but what if I like take some sort of
that's on you, Josh.
Pill for like a headache or something. I don't want to say a brand name or anything, but like, you know, you take something and all of a sudden that makes my checkpoint.
Well, I'm glad you don't want to say a brand name after McDonald's and Taco Bell and everything else. Now you don't want to take down the Bear Aspirin Company.
They're like the mob, man. They'll come after you.
But it's interesting. Like I've got
Big Aspirin. I'm up for Indie Aspirin, you guys.
I've gotten in my car sometimes, like driving to work, and I'm like, what if I just like a guy will walk across the sidewalk?
What if you hit him?
What if I'd hit him? What if I'd vehicular manslaughter that guy? And then I think of like all the different ways that day then goes. I'm like, I don't go to work. I have to deal with the
Well, you know, Maron used to have a bit about that. It was a really great bit about something to do with having a shitty day and then you're driving and then you just imagine hitting someone with your car and what that would be. And he sort of like maps out like what it would do to your life and what it would do to their life, you know, and then you just snap and you're like, oh, I didn't fucking kill anybody. And like all of a sudden your day goes better. Like it's true. Like you
That's,
really.
Yeah. But I've wondered, like, what if I just, like, head-on collision someone coming the other way? Like, would I live? Would they live? Like, what kind of damage would it do? Like, that would be scary.
I think these are human thought.
That's I hope so. Rockstar's Grand Theft Auto 5, the greatest video game
taking
of
it
all
around
time.
Taking it around to GTA 5.
You can
5.
Do all of those things and see what would happen. I mean, granted, when you die, you just have to pay $5,000 and you're back to life, but...
Just like in real life.
Just like in real life.
Oh, yeah, that would be so awesome.
$5,000.
Do you guys ever get sad that, like, this is our only life?
Nah,
I get sad.
I'm good with it.
You know, when I think about... I'll tell you why, because when I think about... To me, it just seems like a lot of work to start over another... It's like, ah, oh, fuck. You know, I have to do so many things to get to this point.
Yeah.
So much... It's just like I think of the entire pile of work of living for that many decades.
It's like learning to talk.
And doing it over again and learning and getting your heart stepped on and fucking up and every, you know, like not all the failures and the having to work hard.
But what if you retain the knowledge that you have now to start your life over at this point? You know what I mean? And then you can start your life over. And then it's like then... You're not going to worry about getting rejected.
You know what, though? There's a great Twilight Zone episode about that.
Then your life goes an entirely different way because you try to change it.
It's the Twilight Zone episode where the guy who the guy who runs a big company, is it starts off, he's in his office and he's bored. There's no joy left in his life because he's conquered every mountain and there's a janitor in there. And, you know, like, oh, we gave you a watch for your retirement. He's like, that's right, 35 years or whatever. And then so the boss... wants
who
to sell a soul to the devil.
Who is played by the guy in UHF, right?
No.
The guy that rode in the station?
Oh, yeah. Oh, fuck. I think he might have just passed away, too.
Yeah.
Look up...
The guy that owns Channel 8 in UHF. Actor.
His name's into my tongue, and it's... Fuck. Anyway, so Julie Newmar as the devil shows up.
I'll say.
And she says, all right, I'll send you back. And, you know, like, he wants to go back in time... With the knowledge that he has now and amass his fortune again.
Yeah.
Kevin McCarthy. Yeah. So he goes back in time, but he has all this knowledge about what's to come, and he wants to go drill in this one spot where he knows there's like an oil or there's some sort of natural resource. But the sort of caveat, the sort of Faustian clause thing is that he... The technology does not exist for him to extract that material.
Oh.
So it completely ruins his life. And then it cuts to later and there's the roles are reversed. Like the janitor is now the boss and he's the janitor.
Oh, wow.
Like 35 years. You know?
Wow.
And then the devil laughs and then it's and nice try, asshole.
And it's just him and the janitor constantly repeating that fate. They just go back and forth.
Tandem.
Well, I didn't mean to bring up that question then.
Okay, good.
Because of your answer, fine. Just like shut me down hard.
No, you're right though. Of course, it'd be amazing to go back and. But I
Does
think
any
you know
part
what I think.
Think you'd go like I'd go back in time and like I'd write Jaws and then.
But you wouldn't write Jaws.
I'm just saying.
But because like, it would, it was like there are so many other like. When you think one-dimensionally like that, it's not just that someone wrote Jaws. There's probably a million Jaws that got written. It's just he had the right time, the right cast, industry, the culture. Like everything was just in the sweet spot. All the events were lined up for that to be a success at that time. You couldn't – like if he had made Jaws – like who knows if you had made Jaws in like 1960, maybe it wouldn't have turned out the same. Maybe the – you know like you just – I just don't believe that everything's like, oh, if I just did this at another time as me.
What if I just went back to like 1958 and tried to join the Beatles?
Then you would have ruined the Beatles because they wouldn't have been the same.
You're right. But I would have written all the songs for them.
And then you know,
or
now you'd
be like hey, why don't you say hey Jude? When I walk away, every time
that's your
just,
songwriting process.
Every time I just walk away like that,
but they're creeped out by you, so they purposely don't say "Hey Jude."
Oh no,
"Hey Jaws."
Whoa,
Paul McCartney wrote Jaws.
Oh, that'd be great.
I don't think changing that one thing. But I think if you had your knowledge now and you like went back to high school, like oh, all those girls I didn't talk to, all those times I was scared when I didn't need to be scared. You know, I think you wouldn't care about the stuff you cared about when you were that age. So it would be like, I don't fucking care. These people are idiots. And so I think that's why you have to apply all of that in the present tense.
Yeah.
Like, do all this stuff, go, oh, well, I'll just live the life I wish I had lived. You know, like, I'll make all the choices and not be afraid.
Because if
now,
you go back in time, you're not going to want to touch your eighth grade girlfriend's boob. You're going to be like, wait a second, I'm a 30-year-old man.
Am I going to get arrested by time cops?
No, can't do this.
Because they know.
You touch your boob, the walls fall away. You're in prison.
No!
Chris Hardwick deflates.
What is he doing here? What is he doing here?
And enjoy your brr.
It was a trap.
Akbar.
Yeah, but I think most people have those worst case scenario. What if I did something that horribly altered the course of my life thoughts? And I think that's all those are. And it's anxiety. And I really do believe the worst questions that you ask in your life start with what if. There's never,
right.
You know, what if I'm a huge success? Like, you never say that. It's always like, what if I ruin this? What if I, you know.
Or you're like, what if Jack Nicholson was the president?
Right.
And then you do your impression.
I think it might go
a little something. Oh, I like this.
Hi, it's weird that I'm in blackface now.
Oh, current.
Because Jack Nicholson.
No.
That's Jack Nicholson playing the president.
You just did an entirely different thing. I'm just saying, what if he was the president?
Oh, what if he was the president?
I want to know why the president's in blackface.
Because Jack Nicholson is playing Barack Obama.
So in your mind, Jack Nicholson impersonated the president.
He was playing the president.
No.
As a role, he was playing
now
the president.
I think we just learned a lot about your inner feelings.
What are you talking about?
You just go to the places we don't want to.
What do you... Matt, please.
It's Chris.
There are so many caverns in the Myraverse.
Oh, you don't want to go in there.
I don't
look in there. Do not look in there.
Matt's emotional core is sort of like, you know, I think maybe in South America they poured a bunch of concrete into an ant colony.
Yeah.
And then they like let it harden and they chipped away all the dirt around and it was this insane like, and this is the chamber that vents all of the garbage and here's this other and here's the birthing. It was a complex... did you ever see that?
What?
You never saw that?
No.
It's unfucking.
Oh,
it's pretty
crazy. Actual concreted.
Yeah, they dumped. They found an anthill and they dumped concrete in it, and
it was like a huge one.
And it was mind-blowingly enormous and incredibly complex and intricate and incredible. And that's what I think. That's what I think your emotional core is like.
This, concrete.
This series of chambers and twists and
trash.
I think of it as a warp core always about to breach.
So you're just constantly hearing this in your head.
It's constantly.
It's just a klaxon.
Constantly
going off.
Rerouting main power through the secondary coupling.
And you're constantly hearing Majel Roddenberry's voice
always
in your head
every night I go to sleep.
Well, it's gonna be. Do you talk about this stuff on stage ever?
No, not yet. I want to. I got a lot of stories and stuff that I kind of want to get into.
Have you been writing more?
Uh-huh. I've been writing a lot. And so, I mean, I love, like, storytelling and stuff. I love, like, The Moth and that sort of, you know, it's very compelling to me. And,
yep.
I
don't understand what The Moth is. Don't say it's a podcast.
Oh, no. Oh, I did not mean to mention anything other than the Nerdist.
There's no
podcast.
Other or anything other than...
Yeah.
I really love cereal, so I'm going to kill someone. God, I hope I don't kill someone and then get accused and then I'm on a podcast.
Oh, my God. I am addicted to that one, though.
I haven't
fully listened to it because I listen to your podcast.
Oh.
And I'm not just saying that to, like, save myself from this.
No, you
but,
knew
like,
to
I
say
do.
Enjoy your burrito at the same time I did.
No, I know.
You knew the dismount.
We like, had a connection there,
together.
Matt. I feel like it would be, like, speaking of, like, a clip show or something, you know, here's the thing that, like, you, to me, Matt, you always have, you have, like, the best job here because you just get to interject with whatever you want.
Uh-huh.
Chris is, like, driving the ship uh-huh. here. Yeah. But, like, there's so many things that, like, I'll be listening to something and I'm like, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch is talking about something like, oh, God, I wish I could say this in that moment. You know, it's like, I want to just come in with a pad
oh,
of
sure.
paper
yeah, yeah,
sometime.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's like, Matt, one time you brought up something about Frasier, and
which you could just say in general.
You are our fans during our Clements at live shows. That's what they
do. But
I'm
just like, what? So, like, all I want to say is, no, I agree. Chris, during the episode with, you know.
Wouldn't it have been funny if instead of deflating, you went into a tiny Jetsons like suitcase?
Yep. But you could totally, you should do a show like that where you just play clips, like funny moments from different interviews.
We could do a Trapped in the Elevator episode.
You know, it wouldn't even be, I would like to not do, what if we did not so much a Trapped in the Elevator episode, but we did an episode of, I don't know how it would work, but a commentary episode. Like we did commentary on an episode of a podcast.
Well, that would just be super annoying because you would be...
Oh, we can pull down the audio while we're saying whatever we're saying. Or like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 audio version. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, you know, the manpower involved with going through 620 episodes...
It'd be like, what if we had 30 employees?
But they have to do other things, Matt. They can't just focus on feeling
so frustrated right now.
I'm just really annoyed.
He just rolled his eyes. He's like, ah, whatever.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, like if people, I mean, it would have to be a communal effort of people submitting, like, here was a moment that I liked, and here's the time code, and then. And then that way we could have Katie.
Listen, reddit.com/r/nerdist. Get on this.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, actually, yeah. If people spent several months compiling moments, like we could create, I think we could do a Trapped in the Elevator episode because that would still give us the opportunity to talk in between.
It'd be interesting.
The clips.
It'd be funny.
Do like a best of. Like I did radio for like 14 years. And as the producer of this show, like I would, every Saturday morning, we did like the best of the week sort of thing. And I had to edit all that stuff together. It is a huge undertaking.
Yeah, that's brutal.
And then sometimes there's just like, you know, you go through a week and it's just like a dead week where nothing happened. And you're just like fighting for a clip that could air on Saturday morning at 6 a.m. when nobody's listening anyway. But like, I feel like you have a lot of content as it is that you could, you know, do something like that.
You could do something fun like
that.
We had
the Attack of the Show Weekend Edition. Remember?
Yeah, I remember. That was the way to not have to shoot 5 days a week.
Beautiful.
There you go.
It was brilliant. Where did you do radio?
In Arizona. That's where I grew up. Yeah.
Which part?
Phoenix.
Phoenix.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Because before we came in, you said you went to Phoenix for New Year's.
Yeah. So what I did when I was like 14, I did a. Do you remember that song "Achy Breaky Heart"?
Yes.
It was like right when
you realize you have a mullet right now and you're telling us about it. No, I know. It's like,
you do not understand. Like, this has come so full circle. You don't even know. Like, I have a headache and I want to take Bayer aspirin, but I trash talked him earlier. So it was like right when that song, like, people started to turn on that song and hate it because it was so popular and then, like, man, we've heard enough and whatever. So I would listen to this was like early 90s. I listened to this radio show called Tim and Willie. And I wasn't like into country music, but it was almost like if Letterman had his own radio show, like they were just fun and goofy or whatever. So I listened to it. I'm 14, waiting for the school bus, and I decided to call up and just do a dumb voice and request "Achy Breaky Heart." And I just like, "Hello, my name is Kako. Can you play 'Achy Breaky Heart' for me?" And they're like, "What? What? Who is this?" You know, and I told them my name's Kako, and I was born in England, and my father was in the Royal Air Force, and we moved to the Philippines when I was 2. Like, it was all bullshit, obviously, and this is like pre-internet, and I'm 14 years old. I don't know where I came up with any of it, but I like committed to this character and just did it. And so they're like, "Oh, Kako, what are you going to do today?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm going to look for a job." And they're like, "Okay, well, let's know how that goes." And then I'd call up the next day, and I'm like, "I didn't find a job." And like, I'm just, there's like, what, who is this guy calling us, you know? And so literally, they're like, "Call us anytime you want." And I literally called every day. And it became this bit on their show. They had no idea I was a fake dude. It became this bit where, like, Kako couldn't find a job. So, like, people are calling up going, like, "Hey, I got a landscaping company. He can come work for me." And then, of course, I wouldn't show up because I had to go to class because I'm 14 years old. And then they'd call the next day, like, "Kako's a lazy bum. He never showed up for work." And then they'd call me at home, and I'm like, "Oh, I fell asleep," or whatever. And, like, I just pulled the wool over their heads. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just, like, dicking around, right? And then I started calling up as Josh and using my voice and saying, "Could you play the phone call from Kako from yesterday? Like, I missed it." And so I'm, like, marketing myself and everything.
That's amazing.
And I had, like, 10 different characters I was doing on their show, and they had no idea it was one dude. And, like, I don't do voices or anything. I just commit to a character and just go for it. And then so they started inviting Kako down to the radio station. And instantly they're like, "You're not Filipino," because I told them I grew up in the Philippines, but I never broke the character. I reminded them. I was like, "No, I was born in England, and my father was in the Royal Air Force." And they're like, "Oh, okay." You know, they just, like, believed it. And I had enough knowledge about the Philippines, like, just I, like, glanced at an encyclopedia, that they asked a couple questions almost as, like, to vet me a bit. And, like, they're like, "What do you think about Aquino?" And I'm like, "Oh, Corazon Aquino, I don't like her." You know, like, just, like, I don't know where I came up with that knowledge. You know, probably the encyclopedia, but they're just like, "Okay, we believe them." And I sat in on their show for like 8 months every morning.
You
and then
went
I would,
into the studio?
I went into
but
the studio.
But they didn't recognize that you were like 14?
Well, I didn't look 14. I looked a little older. I told them I was 26.
Uh-huh.
I didn't look 26, but I was, you know, I was a little bit older. They just believed it, man. And so they had no reason not to believe it because I just ever, like committed.
Did they ever write a check to Kako?
Well, no, that was the thing. The big bit was like, let's find Kako a job. And so then they're like, we're off the air once and they're like, Kako, you know, we can't find you a job. Like, you should just work down here. You spend all your time down here anyway. And that's when I like broke character. I got scared. I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to fill out paperwork or whatever. Like, I go, this is my real voice. And they were just like, holy shit. And I said, by the way, I'm also this guy, that guy. And I named everyone.
Did you hear that on the air?
No, this was off the air. And they're like, you're half the people that ever call this show. You need to work down here. And so, like, I worked down there for 14 years.
See, that was a nice sitcom ending where you thought they were going to be like, leave this place. And they're like, I like your moxie.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
It was fun. So I was working there. We became syndicated for a while. And like I was their executive producer, and I had fun.
That's an amazing story.
But I started to hate it after a while.
Were you only like 17 or something? Like,
I was 19 when we started syndicating.
Wow.
Yeah, and at that point, you know, 5 years in or whatever.
Oh my god!
But it was just like I was doing the news at one point. I like, I was doing the news when Phil Hartman died.
Oh no!
And like,
that was 98.
Yeah, and they're like. And, you know, they're not, like, listening to the news, but they're, like, trying to make me laugh and everything. And so I'm, like, cracking up while I'm, like, saying these serious stories. And I was just like, I can't do the news anymore. Well, I wasn't Kako at that point. I became Jeff the janitor. They made it like, oh, let's pull the janitor and let him do the news, right. You know. And so, I mean, it was just, like, this weird moment of, like, trying not to laugh at these guys while I'm announcing to the
horrible things
to Arizona that Phil Hartman passed away. And, but I just kind of started to get sick of it because we got bought out by a corporate company and they're slashing budgets and all that stuff. So I started to do stand up. That's kind of where I was like, well, I like writing and I kind of don't want to be behind the scenes anymore. I'll just go on stage and do stuff, you know,
like at the Tempe Improv.
At the Tempe Improv. That's where I started.
Nice.
Yeah.
There's a good, the other room in Arizona.
Stand Up Live.
Stand Up Live is a fun room, too.
I haven't done that because they opened that after I moved to Los Angeles. And,
it's a good room.
I have friends who've done it, and they love it.
It's great.
I like it there.
Well, one of these times you should, you know, if you want to come down to Meltdown and do stand up, or you should totally
do a Big Mac attack.
You could do a Big Mac attack.
Please. Please.
Matt wants to see nothing more than to watch your Big Mac attack. What would be funny is if you do it and for some reason the audience is sort of lukewarm on it, but then Matt in the background will be like, bah! Like you'll just hear this one crazy.
Just one clap. It's Matt.
No, Matt will go like Def Jam and fall out of the chair.
So hard. I can't wait.
I need that. I need Matt happening. In every show I do.
It's like a gif in my head. It's a gif. I've seen the whole thing. For some reason you have a black leather jacket. I don't know why.
I don't own one, but I'll do it for you.
That's what you pull it out of.
So we can't, we're actually at an hour. That was an hour just went by.
Oh my gosh.
I know, it goes by so fast.
Wow.
And we obviously can't, as people are like, why don't you talk about Walking Dead? Because we can't talk about anything.
Well, right. Don't worry, they're already going to be mad that we spoiled that Beth died, even though Facebook already did that.
No, you have till, like, if something airs over the weekend, you have till like Tuesday or Wednesday next week.
Not 2 months.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Oh, guys, but I'm not arguing logic.
Why are you arguing logic?
I agree with both of
you. He's really raging right now.
What the internet's going to do.
Oh, wait. The phone's ringing. Hello, is this Kako?
Yes. I want to know why Matt is roid raging.
Well, Matt, Kako has a
Kako, get a fucking job.
Why didn't you show up to that job interview yesterday?
Matt had me locked up in his bedroom.
All right, Kako, was, like, you weren't supposed to say
beating
that.
Beating me with a leather strap.
Also, remember the Big Mac attacks. I would beat him with Big Macs.
Did you tell anyone at school, or were you kind of like, were you like Hannah Montana of Phoenix Radio?
I was like, yeah, I didn't tell them I was in school or anything.
Your school.
Oh no, no one. And I think like I didn't even tell my parents. And then every once in a while,
them you were going to work Monday through Friday at a radio station instead of going to school.
Well.
Hey, Josh, your dad wants to know why
you... Divorced parents, you know, they have other things to worry about.
How come you got a nicer car than your old dad? Yeah. What's going on?
I told my parents, and then I would even say, like, oh, yeah, I called the show again today. My dad would just be like, all right. Like, he didn't care. you know. But I know there was this kid in who worked for like an alternative station, or said he did. And this was at the time I'm going down to the country music station, and he's and like he, this kid was like a rock star in our school because it's like, oh, everyone listens to this cool radio station, and he works there. And like he would talk about things that were he was just making shit up. Like he didn't work there, and I was like fuming because I was working at a radio station, but I didn't want to tell anyone because I didn't want to, like, you know, expose the fact that I was doing a character.
That's really funny that you didn't, that your ego didn't get the better of you to be like, I want to, especially as a teenager, to like to power trip.
Because all I've ever wanted was like for like to be liked and to be like a cool kid or whatever, you know. You would think that like that would instantly make me be like, no, let me trump this.
Because there are two things that I would have loved to have happen. Number one is you to stand up in the lunchroom and go, you don't work at a radio station. She's like, how do you know? And then you go, because I am cuckoo. And then everyone fucking like she like carries you out.
And you get cheered.
Or the other thing too is the other way is that you know, people find out that you're friends with cuckoo, and then like you hear him on the morning announce, like, how the fuck did you get cuckoo in here?
Yeah, I should have done something.
Well, maybe you can go back and change everything.
Bring a camera crew with me and go back in time. That would be great.
Cuckoo is your sitcom. Like, that's your sitcom waiting to happen.
I know. I'm actually, I've got it trademarked just so nobody does that.
Cuckoo.com.
Yeah, Cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.net's different.
Yeah, I know. It's actually something that I want to write. And it's, it, in all seriousness, I did trademark it.
No, like,
I trademarked
you would have
a
had
few.
To. Yeah,
yeah. Right. You know who my lawyer is? Is Chunk from The Goonies. Do you guys know Jeff Cohen?
I know he's
Are you
a lawyer.
Serious?
Yeah, yeah. I knew he was a lawyer. Yeah.
I got a gift for you guys. I brought this. Maybe this is too weird. Because like I didn't. Okay, so I listened to the show and I knew about the little guest book, but in my mind you had like little trinkets and everything around.
Okay.
So I just wanted to get you guys like a gift.
What did you get?
I got you a Chunk Goonies thing.
This is fantastic. It's a Chunk posable action figure.
But like,
does he have that all over his office? Like,
I don't know. I picked that up at a comic book store. But I only thought of that right now because we were talking about trademarking Cuckoo's story.
Cuckoo and Chunko.
And Chunk's the one who did it for me. I don't. His name's Jeff Cohen, but I have to really think about what his name is because I only call him Chunk.
Do you really?
Yeah. He loves it.
He's cool with it.
He's cool with it.
I mean, he.
I'm glad things worked out for him.
Yeah.
He got it. He didn't turn into a snotty teen actor. He got a went to law school, became a lawyer.
I know.
That's fantastic.
It's awesome.
You can get Mikey Mouth. You can get Sloth. Like, you get the whole
Data.
You get the whole group.
They only had Mikey and Chunk. That was it.
Dicks.
Well, I think Sloth would be the first
Sloth
one.
Sloth is the first one to go.
But I would
yeah.
think Chunk would be the second one to go.
Well, there was only one Chunk left. There was a shit ton of Mikeys, man. Sorry, Sean Astin.
Ever the Mikey, never the Chunk. That's what my book title is going to be called.
We should probably say something about Walking Dead.
What do you
so
want
that
say?
People don't get mad.
Okay, we'll do a little mini Talking Dead episode. So what was it like for the group, you know, to know that Beth's not going to be around anymore?
I can't talk about that.
What was it like when Rick's really took the Rictatorship back?
What, does he? I mean, I don't want to spoil anything. I can't really talk
Shit.
About that.
Okay.
Okay.
So when the group...
All right, guys, that does it. Time for Comic Book Men. What are Walt and Ming and Mike up to this week? Brian's saying something pretty funny. It's Comic Book Men.
Well, I'm very happy. Congratulations on the show. And
thanks, man.
I'm so happy, and you're always great on our show, and I'm sure we'll see you on again at some point.
I hope so.
And I mean, I don't watch it. I don't know what's happening. I have the episodes in the – and I get all the episodes in this crazy software that I have to watch them in, which timestamps and name stamps so they know exactly who's and – You know, I have to. There's a whole verification process to even log on to it. And so it's very intense. I have all the episodes waiting, but I will not watch until Feb 8.
Wow. So how far in advance of you doing the show, of doing Talking Dead, do you watch? Did you watch it a couple days before?
It's about 5 hours.
Oh, it's like day of.
Yeah, I'll watch like one or two, and then we're live at 7.
Do you just feel excited that like you know stuff before the rest of the world?
It actually is weirdly... It weirdly weighs on me.
Yeah, it's like knowing that you're Cuckoo.
Yeah, it is. I'm walking around with this Cuckoo information. No, because, you know, I found out, like, it was very hard for me to I found out that Lori was going to die. I mean, I'd read the comics, so I knew that at some point she was probably going to die. But I found out that she was going to die like episode four of that season. And so I was down there shooting, and then she walked around the corner, and she was bloody, and it was clear, like, oh, it's they were just shooting that. And so I had to sit with that for like 6 months and like do Comic-Con, and you know, she came out, and I was like, so what's in store for Lori? That, like, I had to pretend, and I hated, first of all, I felt like I was having to lie to everyone, which I felt terrible about, but of course I couldn't, you know, secondly, it just gnawed at me for months because I couldn't fucking talk anybody about it.
Yeah.
So, I don't watch more than a few hours ahead of time. Because that, to me, that's my other, like, what if, like, what if I were just like, you know, in that moment, so, you know, what's in store? I can't hold it in. Guys, she's going to die in episode four. Like, oh, what if I did that? You know, like, what if I did, like, how fast would I be fired? Pretty fucking fast.
They'd sue you, too.
I'd get sued, I'd get fired, and then all the fans would want to fucking tear me limb from limb.
They all want spoilers. They're like, give us some spoilers. And you're
but
like,
they don't really
want them. Because the answer to that is like, do you really want me to tell you?
No, don't tell me.
What they do.
Mom, like, what'd you get me for Christmas? Cool. Do you want me to tell you? No, I'll wait. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's like, just because I was a huge fan of the show before, it's like I hit the fan lottery. Like, I get to see all the scripts and the episodes like months before they even come out. But then it's this weird responsibility of just like shutting up about it. And
I'm
not
glad,
being able
to by
talk.
The way, I'm glad that they, because again, never knowing how close they stick to the comics, I don't know how long it was going to be for them to before Eugene got outed as.
I thought they were going to drag it on longer. I mean, I knew the moment I took the job that Eugene was lying, and also, you know, if you read the comics, you know, but. Then all of a sudden, like, we had this meeting before season five started, and Gimple's like, yeah, we're going to find out in episode five. I was like, oh, shit. Like, because to me, I'm like, well, I'm useless. You know, it's like I wanted it to be like.
Which, by the way, was Eugene's plight as well.
Yeah.
Because once he told the truth, he was useless.
I am Eugene. That's what it is. But I just wanted, in my mind, I was like, oh, if they announce it in episode 14, like, that's just even longer that I'll be around, because nobody knows how long they're going to be on the show.
But the thing is, the reason why I think Eugene is not useless is because now I think it's interesting to find out who he actually is. Like, I think that's, because that, now that's a whole other journey, is figuring out who this guy is. He obviously has a lot of knowledge about, like, he's obviously a smart guy.
Yeah. What are his favorite episodes of Night Court?
Which Night Courts did he like? Which Frasers were his favorites? Yeah. You know, did
would he kill Seinfeld?
Would he murder Seinfeld if Seinfeld was a walker?
It is interesting just to find out who he is, because I don't think, you know, obviously the fans and the, you know, the viewers want to see who he is and kind of that trajectory, but I think Eugene wants to know who he is too.
Sure.
You know, because he's just a broken man at this point. So. I think the fans are going to love the second half. It's so awesome.
Gimple's been doing an amazing job, and they've also, I feel like they've learned from what may have been perceived as previous mistakes of, like, don't, you know, like, and I mean, I wouldn't even call them mistakes. It's just a different way to story tell, but like staying in one place for too long. Like, they were, I was so convinced that Gareth was going to be like the villain for, he was going to be like another governor.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, a couple episodes in, like, well, he's fucking gone. Like, yep. Whoa, they're not, they're like.
He loves to throw people off.
Yeah. Like, problem, solution.
Yeah.
It's very quick
and
satisfying.
He's the best guy to be running this show, because, like, he was a big fan of the Walking Dead comics before he even was working on the show. It's like, that's what you want. You want a guy who's just like a nerd about it, because you're like, yes, thank you, finally you're going to do this show justice.
Right.
You know? Now, you know, not to take anything away from Frank or Glenn Mazzara or anything, but it's like, my favorite episodes, and I didn't know this because I rarely look up who wrote episodes, but my favorite episodes were Clear, where they're in Morgan's apartment with all the writing. Gimple wrote that.
Yep.
The one where Sophia came out of the barn,
yep,
and they shot her. Gimple wrote that. Like, all my favorite episodes were written by Gimple.
Can I show you something then? Well, I'm going to show you something. Then you will probably... This is horrible for an audio podcast.
No, yeah. I think it's great, Chris. Keep looking.
But...
keep looking silently.
Maybe you recognize that,
ooh,
which is in my house from the... what was that, season two of Talking Dead? That was the in the back. That was what that was the piece
in the background,
which is Sophia just coming out of the barn.
Oh my gosh!
And I had it reframed all fancy, and now
that's
it's
awesome.
Now it's in my house.
That's a really cool picture.
See.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ooh. What's going to happen
now?
What's
going to happen after show?
But yeah, the fans are going to love it, man. I can't wait for it to get started again because there's so many cool things.
Aztec from Breaking Bad, too.
Really? Did they? Aztec.
Yeah, sure. Talking Bad. Why not? Just give it to him.
That was very nice.
Yeah, very nice.
Where is it?
I don't know. No, I have a bunch of Breaking
That's
Bad.
That's on the Sony lot, actually.
I have a bunch of memorabilia from our set from that show, yeah. But it's stuff that I don't know what to do with. Like, do you collect props and stuff? I'm like, well, I don't know what to do with any of this stuff.
No, I have like a bunch of like, I do have a bunch of stuff that I don't need, and in my mind I'm always like, oh, I'll just give this away for charity, and like they can auction it off. But like, no one ever asks me for things.
So now they will.
Now I just like,
now.
I've accumulated this massive.
Till
shit.
Now, they're gonna ask you.
All right.
At Josh, is it Josh McDermott or Josh underscore? Or what's
no,
it?
At Josh McDermott.
Just at Josh McDermott.
Yeah, for everything.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks,
and it's
man.
Good to see you. And have a great, I know you're recovering from the holidays.
Oh, yes. It was a nice binge fest. I just treated my body horribly. And I need to get back on track.
The
holidays
right
are
to
four.
Do sometimes, yeah. I did.
The holidays
I did
are
too.
Four.
We all did.
Yeah, but you went to the Bahamas, didn't you?
I did go to the Bahamas.
People don't want to hear about this, do they?
What?
Did you like
we've
it?
We've recorded five this week. They've heard about it.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Then whatever.
I don't, someone's anthill is exposing itself again.
No, I mean, I'm not going to tell anybody about Palm Springs again. I mean, I feel like we've done that. So
Josh, I had a lovely trip to the Bahamas.
Oh, good.
And,
I mean, off air, we'll tell you everything.
It was really nice. Yeah, nice. It was really nice. And you were in Phoenix and Dallas?
Yeah, and I went to the Bahamas over the 4th of July, and I hated
it. Oh, you didn't like it?
Hated it.
Did you go to Atlantis?
No, I went to Sandals, I think.
Oh, okay.
Well,
it had nothing to do with the resort. It's like the worst time of year to go there.
Oh, that.
Because I flew down from Atlanta, and I was like just looking at it. I was like, it's only an hour away by air. Because like you fly from LA, it's probably, what, like 5 hour.
Well, you probably have to
ride?
Connect. I mean, I'm sure there might be some direct flights, but you probably actually connect through Atlanta.
Yeah, but I'm, you know, so just out of Atlanta, I was like, oh, it's an hour flight. Let's do it. And it's like, it's hotter than Georgia and more humid, and it was just disgusting.
Well, over New Year's, the weather was perfect.
Yeah.
It wasn't
great.
But it's like Arizona. I spent New Year's in Arizona for years in Tucson, and it's the perfect time to go there.
Yeah.
But in the summer, I'm sure in Phoenix, too, you probably just want to like rip your skin off.
Yeah, you go to San Diego is what you do.
Well, I remember performing at the Tempe Improv in August one year.
Oh, yeah.
July or August, and it was like you'd get one step out of a building and then all of a sudden it was just a fucking sprint to the car or the next store or whatever, because you just felt like an ant under a magnifying glass.
Yep, it's just burning on you. And then especially like in August when the monsoon storms come and the humidity increases, so it's still just as hot, and then the humidity's up there at like 115 degrees and
Oh, God.
It's horrible.
Well, I can't ask you anything.
No.
Fuck.
Well, this is starting to end awkwardly.
Well, we'll see you at midnight in a couple weeks, right? He's booked
down
there, yeah.
I'm gonna do that.
Oh yeah, we're doing a Walking Dead version of At Midnight.
Who else is doing that?
Lauren Cohan.
Uh huh.
And Kirkman.
Kirkman's doing it?
Yeah, yeah. Kirkman's gonna do it.
Can't
and
wait
then,
for him to be all
I'm gonna
Kirkman-y.
put in some calls to some other folks to see if they'll drop on in.
Kirkman just has to win it all. you can't like let someone
he
else
will,
like
his,
do better than him, because then it'll be like, oh hey, no,
well,
that's
no,
good you won. I
Kirkman
I like
win with
character.
His special brand of sarcastic jabs.
No, he'll say that. He'll be like, you know, if you eliminate me, I can have you fired. And
yeah,
I'll be like, yes,
you don't have to keep holding that over my head,
Chris.
He's hilarious, man.
He is. Absolutely.
He's great. Look, you've been trying to wrap up this podcast
for
like
worries.
20 minutes.
No, I'm
well, sorry.
The writers have been waiting for 35.
That's all right. But I'll see you in a couple of weeks. And would you like to sign us off, Josh? Would you please do the honors?
Yes.
As
Cacao.
Hey, enjoy your burrito.
Caco.
That could work.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.